With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, and welcome to Bat Flips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. I'm Darius Austin. We are back for our second weekly roundup, and joining me today, a crew of pundits, new member of the team, Ben Carter. Ben, how are you?
I'm very well, Darius. Yeah. Hair freshly cut.
Which match of the day pundit are you comparing yourself to, do you think?
Ooh, that's a toughie. I'm going to make myself Alan Shearer. I'll politely chuckle to one of your bad jokes.
So who's the player that you have the infatuation with the same ways that Shearer did with Cristiano Ronaldo?
It's a good question. You know what? We'll get to him in the good.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Don't use up the content, guys. Giving a polite chuckle there was our second Alan Shearer, apparently, Rob Navarro. Rob, how's it going?
I'm not bad, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, yes. And finally, you've heard him already. It's Russell Eason. Russell, have you got a pundit picked out?
I would hope that I'm something more in the range of Mick McCarthy, just dour about everything. So let's go with that.
Relentlessly miserable, regardless of topic. So positive start. Let's get this positive start rolling with some complaints, I think. Our first piece of big news today is coming out of the Atlantic League. And as we've learned in recent years, the Atlantic League basically means one thing, and that's lots of rule changes. So Major League Baseball has decided to experiment with two pretty major things. They're moving the mound back to 61 feet, 6 inches, a whole foot. And they're also going to try something which has been called the double hook. I believe Jason Stark came up with this name, which basically means that the DH only lasts as long as the starting pitcher is in the game. So obviously some interesting strategic viewpoints to be had there. But I'll start with you, Russell, because I know you've got some pretty strong thoughts about this mound moving back.
Yeah, I just don't think you should do it in a professional league. I think there are consequences. Effectively, the players that are pitching in that league are not the best paid players in the world, but they're all basically trying to earn a buck. And you are changing the way that they play the game that is different to every other professional league in the world. And I don't think they could be severely detrimentally hit by this, because are they going to go and get picked up by other teams during the winter season or next year because they have some bizarre season because they've been pitching a different length? So I really don't like it. I understand that we've got to try and test these sorts of things. And this is one where I don't think we have no knowledge about what could actually happen by testing this. I think there's the idea that people will get more time to think about what they could do. So you get a greater reaction time. So hitters could probably do better and not strike out as much. But pitchers could also move the ball more because how this thing combines, we just don't know. And as far as I'm concerned, there are other things we should be testing more than this that I think have less of a detrimental impact on players. And I think this all comes from the fact that MLB basically hasn't made a change in the last, 40, 50 years, when they made so many changes historically. Yes, the mound has been lowered. The mound has been moved forward and back. It changed like three times in the 1800s. But because MLB almost didn't do anything for 40 years, we're stuck at this position now where MLB's going, oh crap, we need to make changes. And I just think half of them that are suggested are useless. But that's just my happy opinion on it.
Rob, counterpoint, you have got a happy opinion on this, right?
I'm more the opposite, but I feel that one of the first things I hate most when I'm at work is people who say, oh, that we do that because that's the way we've always done it. So, you know, let's give it a go. No, we don't know what's going to happen. We haven't got a clue what's going to happen. It could be absolutely terrible. But my point with this is that I think there isn't a better place to try this because, firstly, the Atlantic League has signed up with the MLB to sort of almost be their petri dish, their testing zone. And yes, perhaps we could say maybe they should have given them a little bit more notice to the players. I can see there is an element of you know, these guys have had this very quickly foisted upon them. But, you know, it's been more than a year now since they known that this was what was going on. And the alternative to testing it here is testing it on the minor leagues. And that seems to have a lot more of an issue for me because this is young guys trying to get into their career, trying to develop themselves. Whereas the Atlantic League, yes, it has people in that situation, but it also has a lot of people who haven't made it through the normal minor league systems. And so they're looking for something a bit different. And, you know, yes, it could be an absolute disaster. Pitcher arms could come flying off everywhere. That would be absolutely awful. But that really is a worst case scenario. What I think we'll find is that some guy who wasn't great at pitching from 60 feet and 6 inches will suddenly take a step up and be that little bit better that may get him his go, may get him his career in the majors or back into the minors. So, I mean, you don't know until you try it. I mean, this thing has been touted around. We've all listened to it on Effectively Wild. We've all listened to a lot of people talk about maybe we should move it back to help with the scoring environment. And you know what? Until we try, until we have a go and prove that it's crap or, hey, it could be good, until we've tried it, people aren't going to stop saying, let's give it a go. So I can't think, it's not perfect. Yes, this is people's careers, but I can't think of a better place to have to get this done so we can say one way or another, okay, this is worth looking at further, or this is rubbish, let's just cut it, because it's going to keep on any either way. So let's just get through it. Let's find out what happens. Could be great. Could be absolutely brilliant.
I think this could be the death of the Atlantic League, because we had Rick Teasley on this podcast, and he spoke about how utterly pissed off he was with them changing the rules and how effectively he wasn't going to go back and how people didn't go back to the league, chose not to go to the league because you're messing with their livelihoods. So I agree that there's probably no other better place to do it. I don't think there is a good place to do it, but I think we're sat here discussing what other changes they need to make because MLB can't change the one thing that probably would be the simplest, which is the ball.
I mean, the ball discussion could go on forever, absolutely. But, you know, when it comes to those people not returning, I mean, that's the league's decision. And it's not like there are other great leagues. And finally, the other thing to say is that these guys in the Atlantic League are still competing against each other. And major league teams or major league organizations won't be blind to the fact that they're all using these new rules. And so there's an opportunity to be had. Yes, some people will hate it. They'll walk away from it, and it could be detrimental to the Atlantic League. I do see that point. That's a very good point. However, they knew this was happening. You know, they've got a year of it now. They knew it was coming. They could have chosen to go elsewhere. There are the big leagues. Plus, there is an opportunity here for them to say, hey, look, I didn't cut it with the current rules, but if it goes to this, look at me. I have something a bit different that really could work with these rules if they come through. So there's opportunities as well, swings and roundabouts, but I think there is an upside to it that, as you say, it can't really be done anywhere else.
And you're the most qualified person here to actually talk about pitching, having pitched from an actual professional baseball mound. How do you think this is going to affect the game? Do you like it? And do you think it's going to make a big difference to anybody?
I mean, I think pitching from a 60 feet mound is hard enough. The last thing we need to do is move it further back. And I'm sure people, celebrities worldwide worrying about their first pitch feel the same. I don't know. I agree with both guys, as weird as that sounds. I'm fascinated to see how this plays out. I think it's something that we've all speculated at times. Certainly the double hook rule you mentioned, I think that's a cool, interesting, innovative idea. I like I like seeing what that's going to be like. But it's almost like the zoo, in that you know morally it's wrong and you shouldn't go, and the animals don't like being there, but you also really do want to see the penguins, and it's kind of nice to see those animals. I almost felt like that about it. Morally, this is wrong, and these players shouldn't have to have their livelihoods messed with just to experiment on the game. But at the same time, as Rob said, at some point the game has to adapt, has to evolve, and you have to start somewhere. And I guess it's just bad luck or bad planning, whatever you want to call it, that it happens to be the Atlantic League who are the sort of guinea pig in this situation.
I mean, I'm kind of interested by this double hook, and it seems like there could potentially be some good incentives there. But then I know that there's some concern that it's also just going to make teams that are losing even worse. Do we think that this is going to work? You don't think it's going to pan out, Rob?
Firstly, I will say I object to saying that Ben is the most qualified person to talk about pitching, because I put a pretty good dent in a washing machine in Camden. Anyway, moving on. Double hook is, yeah, the problem is, of course, you know, yes, it's trying to make starting pitchers go longer, but are we just grasping onto the past a little bit too strong there? I mean, you could say, all right, well, let's do away with bullpens altogether. Let's insist that all starters go for 9 innings. There's another way of making your starters go longer. But everyone knows that's ridiculous, because that's the history. That's the past, and the game's moved on. Again, this has moved on. My problem with this double hook, of course, is, as you say, it penalises, even if you do go to the standard starter, it penalises a starter who gets shelled. Blake Snell last night got taken out of the game after 0.2 innings because he gave up 8 runs. Or whatever it was, I don't know. It was a huge number of runs. He was not on his game. So the Padres were already down at that point, you know. And then you take away the DH when it goes universal from that point. You secondary penalize the team that's already behind. So you're pushing them further down, and you're also you're countering development and interesting tactics. Now, yes, I'm a Rays fan, and so I like the fact that we tried the opener and things like that, but that effectively kills the opener from day one. So I think this of the two rules is the sillier of the two rules, which I know is not a popular thought.
Russell, analytically, how do you think this is going to work? Can you see the incentives actually panning out more on the right side than the wrong side?
Not really. There's some interesting things that could occur because of this, but I think Rob does push a fairly central point to this, is that I think this will make comebacks harder, especially on a scale, because you have to take your DH out. What it does is it almost then rewards the teams that have the bigger benches, which could be a good thing. That could mean that teams actually want to pay to have like an extra fifth outfielder or an extra like utility man, so they'll actually pay some players to stay around a while, so you can have those pinch hitters that you'll use later on in the games when the pitcher then becomes a live batter and nobody wants the pitcher to bat. So I can see some elements towards this about why you're trying to incentivize that starter going further. But I think, as Rob said, it's based off the idea of how many times do people go to a baseball game because it's like Max Scherzer versus Jacob deGrom? Like, I would. Do you go to a game to watch Tyon Walker versus Joe Ross? Not really. That's not what is drawing me to go like watch that game. So I think some people are stuck in the idea of like a starting pitcher is like a key aspect to the game, and we still have aces and those guys are still amazing and they are draws, but your third, fourth, fifth starters for most teams are not draws to get people into the game. So I would prefer that teams are allowed to work out the best ways to win instead of having their hand kind of like drawn towards, you've got to do this because we think this is more entertaining.
Yeah, I think those are all excellent points. We should probably stop complaining about stuff now. So let's talk about something that Ben suggested, which is pitchers being really excellent, especially Joe Musgrove. Joe Musgrove threw the first ever San Diego Padres no-hitter over the weekend, predicted by some idiot that runs the Padres UK Twitter account, who shall remain nameless. Ben, first of all, did you catch Musgrove's no-hitter, and then generally, do you think all this picture dominating is good for the game?
I didn't catch any of it live. Obviously watched it back the next day. And yeah, look, it's hard to argue against that being a really cool moment for a franchise that has never had a no-hit. So I don't know how many franchises are left without one, but certainly the Padres were one of a few who'd never got there.
I think that's it now. I think it was them and the Marlins, and the Marlins had one a few years ago.
Yeah, so the Marlins were the last.
That's it. Yeah. Okay, well, there you go. That's kind of a shame then, I suppose, that every team's now got one. But great that he's a San Diego kid who did it, and a pitcher who's been, you know, underrated, I think, for a little while now. Great to see him kind of get his plaudits. I'm someone who loves great starting pitching, so I like seeing pitchers pitch well, and we've seen some, you know, vintage performances already this season from aces and from less heralded guys too. But I think there is a concern that, you know, we're reaching a point at which the game's balance between offense and pitching is way out of whack. I know certainly last season there was a stretch of pitching dominance to start the year, which we attributed to the short spring training and hitters not quite having a timing right. I don't know if this is something that's happening again this year, where it's just going to take a bit of time for hitters to get locked in. And I know that as the weather heats up, the ball flies further, etc., offense heats up. But it's a little bit concerning, I think, that we've seen such little offense from most teams this season, and a concern that we're heading the way of a lot more shutouts, a lot more games that are low scoring, a lot more moments of inaction on the field. So look, as someone who's a great enjoyer of quality starting pitching, I think it's great from that perspective, but from a more holistic view of the game as a whole, it concerns me a little bit. And I suppose it's what leads to things like this Atlantic League mound experiment.
Rob, you've changed your nickname on here to Glasnow, so presumably you're all four pitchers throwing complete game shutouts every night, as Corbin Burns appears to be on his way to doing against the Cubs right now.
When they're the Rays, yeah, absolutely. No, I tend to actually, I am more of a fan of hitting than I am of pitching. I absolutely appreciate a pitcher, of course I do. And Tyler Glasnow has been incredible. He's added a slider out of absolutely nowhere. And he was already sort of one of the best fastballs plus decent curveball. Now he's added a plus slider as well, and he is completely unhittable at the moment. If he stays healthy, I have a £5 bet on, like I did with Zach Gallen, I have a £5 bet on for Tyler Glasnow to win the Cy Young. And I think right now he is probably at the top of the list. He's certainly at the top of the war list for pitchers. But generally, no. I mean, I don't like watching it, because as much as we can sit and we can concentrate on a good pitching start, and you watch every pitch and you think, yep, that was a great pitch. That was a great pitch. That, if you are partially watching the game or casually watching the game, which, yeah, we all have busy lives, we all have to do. If you're looking up every few seconds and seeing what's going on, it can be a little dull. And if you get a great, great, great pitcher's duel where they are striking everyone out, absolutely fine. But the majority of them are just a little dull, I'm finding them at the moment. So I prefer a little bit more offense. It's not working for me right now.
How about you, Russell? Is it working for you? League-wide strikeout rate is nearly at 25% so far this year.
Yeah, well, we've got pitchers back, but I might discuss that a bit later. But no, it's. I think I'm the same with Rob. It's there are some nuanced moments where it's fantastic. I would have loved to have been able to watch the game between Bieber and Giolito last night as it happened, because that seemed to be like a proper pitching duel. And although it probably would have been thoroughly depressing to kind of still see Cleveland's bats be awful, it would have been like a really entertaining game to watch. And yeah, it then came down to the delightful extras rules, and Bieber got his win from pitching 9-inning shutout. So they are entertaining. And the Musgrove one is fantastic as well.
Yeah.
I was just looking it up. And do you know the difference in expecting a batting average between San Diego and Texas in that game? The expecting batting average from San Diego was 259, and the expecting batting average from Texas was 208. San Diego got 8 hits and Texas got none. It was a great game. It was a great piece of, like, there wasn't like this one standout play that never happened, but there were two or three hits that you were like, that was more than 50% likelihood of being a hit in a standard game. So it's all interesting to watch, but The dominance, if it continues over the next couple of weeks, it's not great, because you don't want to have the one side that probably already has slight dominance to continue to gain it, because it's not good for baseball as a whole. That being said, we still have teams like the Mets where you could have a great starter and still not win games. So there is still entertainment to be had later on in games because of some awful bullpens that exist out there.
I would say, as a statistical quirk so far, where it seems to me, and you may well put me right here, it seems to me that when one team is free scoring, it's tended to be quite a high scoring game from both sides. We haven't had a lot of absolute blowouts so far. It's been close either way, be it a low scoring game or a high scoring game. And, you know, that's better than what it could have been, because we could have seen some real stars and scrubs moments to this point, but we haven't, I don't think.
Yeah, and we're still at the point where teams are kind of like aligned with their starters. So you generally have number ones going against number ones, or at least number twos or number threes. But we'll start to get misaligned as the team schedules continue on. So we could see some of those ludicrous blowouts.
Yeah, only going to accelerate some of these rule changes, I think. I have got important news for the Batflips Nerds minor league free agent draft, which is that Shelby Miller is on the mound for the Chicago Cubs right now.
Yes! Yes!
He's on the mound. That's good news for Rob. He's on the board. He's got a batter face.
I'm not last!
I was about to say, how many points do I get for Tim Dillard's commentating?
0 points, Russell.
Outrageous.
I'm sure Gav will be keeping track of that for us as the year goes on. I guess we should do too good, too bad. I know John was disappointed to end on bad last week, so maybe we should start with the bad and finish with good things. Let's go to you, Ben. What was bad for you this week?
So my first bad actually is the standings. I'm not saying it's the standings just because the Rockies suck, because I think we all saw that coming and don't expect that to change anytime soon. But it seems to me that we haven't got that kind of one crazy team coming out the gate fast that we usually have. All the teams are kind of middle of the pack at the moment. The best team in baseball is the Dodgers. So that's fun. It feels like we haven't got that one exciting team taking us all by storm, causing the hot take headlines that we usually have. I think the Mariners in 2019 got off to like a 15-6 start. I think the year before that, the Pirates were like out the gate hot. I feel like every year we have someone who everyone knows is rubbish, but for 2 weeks you kid yourself, maybe there's something there. This year, I feel like we haven't got that yet. And look, we're only like 10, 11 games into the season. But I'm disappointed that we haven't got a rubbish team sitting there at 9-2 or something like that. There's still time for that to change, but I'm a big believer in on pace four statistics. I mean, not having many fun on pace four statistics as far as team standings are concerned.
Yeah, the Orioles looked like they were going to be there, didn't they, when they started out 4-0. Like, I thought, oh yeah, it's going to be a great couple of weeks where the Orioles are in first place, and then it just immediately evaporated.
Back under 500.
Yeah.
I think Rob's un-so-subtle cough of the Red Sox, who are riding the 7-game winning streak, is potentially one. I think on the other side, they have lost a couple in a row, but Philly's good start was a little bit surprising. We'll see, obviously, if they can continue to go that one.
But Mariners and Royals are over 500 as well, you know. So, but you're right; they're not darting out as fantastic teams who are setting the world alight. They are just barely better than average, and a lot of teams are hovering around that average right now.
Yeah, I think the Red Sox are doing the best effort. To get swept by the Orioles in the first series and then win 7 in a row is pretty good as far as low baseball goes. But they're having to carry the weight for everyone at the moment.
Yeah, it's just not quite there, is it? You're right. There isn't a real standout. Having the Dodgers being first already, it's a bit like Trout being on top of the war leaderboard. It's like, yeah, obviously, but also, couldn't we have something a little bit weird for a couple of weeks?
Exactly.
I mean, the Nats are standout bad, but that's not really fair, is it? It's not really their fault. They're playing their AAA team.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. We've got two teams that started way behind everybody else. So, you know, they've hardly even got any playing time. Rob, over to you. Too bad.
On a bad, right? Okay, so I am going to start with people throwing at people. This is the oldest and most boring thing in the game right now, but It's back, everyone. We've got a week and a half into the season, and already we've got two series completely marred by the way that guys are throwing at each other. So to kick off, you've got the Brewers and the Cubs, who are taking chunks out of each other. Wilson Contreras seems to be a ball magnet at the moment, mostly towards his head. And then they start throwing at Brandon Woodruff as well. And that's got nasty. And yes, there's a rivalry, great. But you know what? Run on the pitch and hit each other. It's more fun than seeing someone deliberately try and throw an extremely hard object at someone's head. And then, of course, you've got the Rays and the Yankees. The Yankees have been headhunting at the Rays again. And I am so bored of it.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm so bored of the same old thing. And everyone's going to say the same things. Oh, you shouldn't throw. Sort it out in other ways. You shouldn't throw them out. Yeah, we know. Just get over it. Move on. Either punch each other in the face because it makes great telly, or just be the better team, because this constant tit for tat is boring. It's dull. It's rubbish. It's looking at someone trying to hurt someone else in a way whereby only one guy's got the gun. You know, it's not a duel. It's a complete one-sided thing, and it's ridiculous. So can we move on? Because it's sickening and I'm bored of it.
Full endorsement here. Move on. Russell, go.
Video replay? Seriously, boys? Like, oh, let's just have someone slide past home plate, not touch it at all, have that angle available for review, and then still decide that the person was safe. It's like, I'm sorry, but I can understand that there are issues with review about when things can and cannot happen, and I can understand that there are judgment calls which I might disagree with or certain fans might disagree with. But when there is right and wrong, which is plainly available for a decision to be made, and the decision is not changed or is not done to the correct thing, you're not doing your job.
Mm-hmm.
And so the MLB review system is not great. But it isn't VAR, people. Please, we can't be at the point where every single week there is something where we're just like, oh, this was obvious. How did we get like the wrong call? It's just depressing. And it, like, these things are supposed to be there to stop the obvious mistakes. And yet an obvious mistake was allowed to happen.
And that wasn't the only one, was it? You know, we saw again in a Rays Yankees series, you know, there was a ball that bounced and it was immediately called as a ball, and then the Yankees batter decided to say, no, that hit me. And so the ump changed his mind. And then replay review decided that it wasn't clear and convincing that it didn't hit him. Therefore, he was allowed to take first base. And that's going to be a very unpopular view amongst our New York fans, and my apologies for that. But you know, it was one of those ones that if you were on the receiving end of that, every single team would have been, what the hell just happened here? So replay review's taken a knock this week.
Shelby Miller update has loaded the bases. No outs.
He's faced four batters.
Don't we only get points for getting outs?
No, it's for batters faced.
Oh, is it batters faced?
Yeah, so he's really rifling through the batters faced. He might be off the roster after this outing.
Hey, if he's only given one inning, and yeah, he's certainly making the most out of that inning.
I think he's thrown four strikes so far in 15 pitches.
Been there.
Been well. Mine is not going to be Shelby Miller, I don't think, which is, you know, that would be a bit mean. I feel bad for Shelby Miller, actually, because he was having a good career for a little bit then, and then he wasn't, so.
A week.
I'm going to mention something which, you know, is probably a bit obvious, but racism is bad, guys. Yu Chang made an error on Monday night and then got a bunch of racist abuse on Twitter, which is awful. And I think, you know, sometimes people like to say, oh, this stuff isn't really as bad as people say it is. And no, it's still out there, and there are still people who think that this is okay. So don't abuse people, racists. Don't throw baseballs at people. You know, this stuff's all pretty simple, but people keep doing it anyway. So here we are.
Okay, now who's going to come in with the racism isn't bad comment? Who's going to counter that one?
Counterpoint? Yeah.
Let me just... Cleveland fan. As a Cleveland fan, I would like to say, oh, it's just ridiculous. It's like, Chang is like seemingly a great person from everything that I've followed him from outside of like Twitter. He's Taiwanese. He's one of these kind of like young players that like chose to come across instead of like staying out there. So... And he's playing first base for effectively like some of the first times in his career, because that's where the gap is in Cleveland. And he made a mistake by throwing the ball and hitting the back of the player's head, which caused the ball to Kerum and somebody to manage to score for a winning run. I'm like, there are far worse errors that I've seen in baseball games.
Absolutely.
And one, obviously racism is horrendous. Two, you shouldn't be just sending any abuse to a professional sports player when they make a mistake. Like, what is the level of your life when you are howling abuse at professional sports stars because they made a mistake? Like, sort yourself out, mate.
Let's have something positive. Ben, what are your good points from the week?
So, for my first good, I am going to go with Tyler Naquin. A former Cleveland
Surely.
Ben's looking like he's not seen that clip.
I've not seen this clip.
Joey Votto was giving pronunciation guides in his presser the other day.
Got you. Okay. That guy, he's my choice for good. Former Cleveland Indian, so you kind of know that as soon as he gets out of there, he's going to end up being really good, and that's kind of what's happened so far with the Reds. I think he's expected to be a bench bat for them, but there were some injuries to Winker. I think he was ill or something. Anyway, Naquin got some starts last week and has just been on fire. I think he's got 5 home runs so far this season. His Statcast numbers are just absurd. He's like 100th percentile for exit velocity, for barrels, for all of the good stuff. So just a nice story, you know, non-tendered by the Indians over the winter, gone to the Reds, not expected to get much playing time, and hitting the absolute snot out of the ball. I don't expect it to continue, but still, good for you, Tyler.
Yeah, Reds are on fire. It's pretty fun to watch, even if Gav will constantly keep reminding us of it. Speaking of on fire, Russell, I think you've got somebody who was absolutely on fire to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Byron Buxton, baby. Like, this is what people have hoped for how many seasons are we at now? 5, 6, 7, 8? Like,
actually, feels like a decade, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's not even like 10 or 11 games. And we all, as I think Rob put in the other one when we were talking about Otani, we know he's probably going to get injured, but it's amazing to see it like while it still happens that like his bat has just finally seemingly lived up to that expectation of what we knew he could do. He's an outstanding defender. So just seeing all of that talent finally coming together in some amazing couple of weeks of baseball. And I think right now, at least according to Fangraphs, he's got ahead of Trout as the best player in baseball. I think he has like 1.2 compared to Trout's 1.1. So it's great to see. And like you say, it's just one of those players that's just had that injury history. Then I think for most fans, like you wish them to do good, because it's always horrible to have like seen a player's career marred by injuries.
Yeah, but it's pretty excellent.
His current WRC plus is 334. Is that good?
That sounds good. That usually doesn't start with a 2, let alone a 3. So.
Yeah, and his BABIP's only like 470 odd. So we know that's utterly sustainable. So.
Let's get on board. We wanted more weird early season stuff. This is it. Rob, over to you.
Okay, I've got... I've got a couple of Braves takes. So I'm going to go with Freeman, but I just want to put in there very quickly, Ronald Acuna Jr., just how wonderful that he's just decided he's going to be the fastest man on the planet. And and he's doing everything just with his speed. It's incredible. But that's a side part. That's not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about Freddie Freeman being a great guy. I don't know how many of you saw this, but Freeman tossed a ball up into the stands, and kid dropped it, and then it plopped back down. So he threw it back up again. Kid dropped it again. Finally, the ball gets up to him, and then the kid gives it to a smaller kid. And these stories, they're 10 a penny on the internet of how all I love them every single time. And so eventually, the next day, this is a Phillies fan. Freeman gets a ball signed by Harper. Then he also signs it for himself, and he gives it to the kid who was altruistic and gave the ball to the smaller kid. And I know it's saccharine sweet rubbish, but you know what? I can't get enough of these stories. It's just nice. It's just nice to watch people being nice and then them getting a nice thing because of them being nice without them even wanting to get the nice thing because of it. It's just altruism. And it's a way the world could be better if we were all more like that kid and all a little bit more like Freddie Freeman.
You big softie, Rob.
The thing is, all I can imagine is Rob there, like, trying to kind of like steal the ball himself.
I would have punched both kids for the ball.
It would be great if we could all be more like Freddie Freeman, but we're not. So give me that baseball.
We're all more like Zach Hampel.
I'm going to talk about somebody much more relatable very quickly, because it's just Zach Greinke doing Zach Greinke things, throwing a 51 mile per hour strike. Just incredible. Wasn't a great game for Greinke. I think he pitched 4.2 innings, gave up 6 runs to the Tigers. Not what you want, but just casually in the middle of the game, tossing the 51 mile per hour strike in there like it's nothing. Right in the middle of the strike zone. Greinke is the best. Let's do another round of bad, I guess.
I feel like that's the only opportunity he maybe has to do it. Like, if the game is going bad and they're just like, oh, let's just get out of the innings, and he's just like, time for the Ephus pitch.
Do we think we'll see a slower Ephus?
Sorry, I was going to say the Athletic piece on Greinke that mentioned that he'd said to someone, oh, I'm going to throw a pitch 61 inning. And sure enough, threw 161. I wonder if this time the same conversation was had where I'm going into the 50s, I'm going to hit 52. I feel like he probably did.
I would not put it past him.
How slow could he possibly throw it? Because I know there is some kind of crazy maths about arcs and parabolas and how far up it could go, and he could 27 miles an hour. But I reckon if anybody could beat that and throw a slower pitch, it is our man Zach.
He'll probably save it for his last ever start or something, won't he?
I'm in for that.
Yeah, I'm on board. Shelby Miller update. He did not get anybody out. He walked 2 runs in and then got pulled.
Hey, I'm on the board, all right?
Rob, he's got 5 batters faced. Hey. None of them were out, but 5 were faced, and that's all that counts. From the bad to the still bad, let's go back to you, Rob. What's your second bad?
My second bad is Rougned's Odor's terrible no-shaved face.
Terrifying.
Now, we've all seen Yankees who've had to take the beard off, and it looks a bit odd. We're thinking maybe about Kutch in particular. Like, we didn't like that he had to remove his beard because we all liked him. Odor's got his certain place for fighting in history, but he shaved his beard off and he looks like a different person. I was quite disturbed by what he looked like. He was not the man who with the beardy man who had a great big fight at second base. He was a very baby-faced young man who looked like a potentially a very young Manny Machado. And I was watching it on mute to start with, and I didn't honestly know it was him. Of course, he doesn't have the name on the back as well. So I thought, oh, look, some new Yankees getting his first go. That's exciting. Then his name popped up, and I was disturbed to the point that I almost turned it off. That's not a look that I expect from baseball players whose faces I know. And it's not easy to know all baseball faces. It's not easy at all. But that was a baseball face I know, and now I don't know it, and I'm upset by it.
It's easy to forget that he's been in the majors for 8 years, but he's also only 27 years old. So
he looks about 6. It's ridiculous. I mean, I look like a sun-dried scrotum for my age. How has he stayed so damn young looking? My God.
There's an image for everybody. Something to take home with you. Ben, back to you.
Thinking about Rob's sun-dried scrotum, but anyway.
You can pick that if you want.
My other bad, I was going to talk about, and I think it deserves an honorable mention, the Mets' complete inability to score any runs when Jacob deGrom starts, which is become sort of a form of comedy at this point. You have to respect it. But I'm actually going to pivot based off our conversation we've already been having tonight about Shelby Miller. And my bad's going to be the Chicago Cubs. They are bad. They have this season had the fortune of playing six games against the Pirates already, and they still have a record below 500. Their offense is dead last in the majors in pretty much every important category. WRC plus of 63. That's not good. I think we all thought the Cubs were a hard team to predict this season because if players bounced back, they'd end up being good. But, you know, they got rid of Darvish. The rotation had a lot of question marks. Turns out, not hard to predict. They just suck. I think the Cubs are really bad. Especially this lineup, and it's not looking good for them. Not to read too much into the start of the season, but I think it's panic stations if you're a Cubs fan.
Cubs are hitting 167 coming into this game, and they have got two hits against Corbin Burns through six innings. Not really what you want when you're like struggling and need to get a little tune up to face Corbin Burns at the moment, but that's where they're at. So I think that's going to go down, that batting average, if this game is a thing to go by.
Yeah, I think every pitcher facing the Cubs is now on no hitter watch.
The Cubs are now Mike Zunino. Yeah. Russell, I think we've got a segue here.
Yeah. Other things that can't hit well. Pitchers! Come on, people, really? Like, what? Like, I was unbelievably happy last year when we had the Universal DH. I thought this was the end of one of the bizarre things that's left in baseball, which was pitchers hitting. And to me, it's bizarre because they don't do it at college. They don't do it at high school. They don't do it basically at any professional level in many other countries. And it's just like, why? Because some people think that it's interesting strategy to do some swapping later on in the innings. No, it's bollocks. I watched this afternoon or this evening, I watched Joe Ross foul tip strikeout on a bunt because that was the best thing he could do. And guess what? In getting Joe Ross to be at bat, Wainwright had given up two people on base. They're on first and second with one out. Intentionally walks Yan Gomes to load the bases up. Strikes out Ross on a bunt tip and then strikes out Victor Robles afterwards. It's like, you know what? Like, we just don't even have to pitch at like semi-bad players because we know you're really, really awful. It's boring. Like, I'm not saying the pitchers can't hit, because Shohei Ohtani exists and Shohei Ohtani has a home run and no other pitcher has a home run so far this season. And that's Shohei Ohtani having a home run as a pitcher because he got a home run in the game where he was pitching. So he's done something that none of the best players has. They've got six doubles so far, so we should laud them for that. I'm sorry, it's boring, it's reductive to the game, and it annoys me that it's back.
Isn't DeGrom out hitting everyone on his team in his own starts?
I think he's got three hits and nobody else has. Yeah, I think one person has three and somebody else has two on his starts. Yeah.
Oh, it's only one more year, Russell. It's only one more year.
You reckon? Hopefully.
I think so. I don't think they're making the case to stick around, are they? Pitchers hitting.
neither the MLB or the Players Association actually want it. It's just neither of them want to give something up to get rid of it because that's how collective bargaining works. It's like, we both don't want this, but I'm not going to say I don't want it because then you'll say, well, what do we get in return? It's stupid, but I think as part of a full CBA, it'll be gone. So, and that'll be good. But
I can see them ballsing it up enough not to get rid of it. And the only, you know, we get everything we don't want, yet somehow the American League ends up losing the DH.
You've already had two bads, Rob.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to make mine quick. I'm going to do my bad and then my good. My bad is that Logan Webb got sent to the bullpen, which is, I wrote about Logan Webb earlier this week. Kind of interested in some things he's doing this year. Added a lot of movement on his changeup and his sinker. It was looking kind of interesting, even though his first two starts weren't great. But the Giants have a bunch of pitchers, so here we are. I'm sure we'll be back. My good, he's a divisive guy, but Yadier Molina reached 2,000 games caught with the Cardinals. Hey. First ever catcher to do it with one team. I think just catching 2,000 games is insane. I cannot imagine the number doing that does in your body. But doing it all with one team is pretty cool. Maybe in 2004, still sticking around. I kind of like Yadi. We always say that MLB doesn't have enough characters, but he is a character. I think he's pretty cool for the game. So well done, Yadi Molina. Let's go to good from Russell.
I also just want to say it was awesome that it was to Wainwright as well.
Oh, yeah.
It and just feels like that's the perfect combination.
Really cool.
My good, Tim LaCastro, baby. Yeah, he managed to. He's picked up another one last night. So he's now at 29 for 29 for stolen bases. Passed the Reigns' record for the most stolen bases without getting caught. But also, he's a productive hitter this year as well. Like, he actually is looking like a genuine player and not just the, let me just stand just right here and take that hit and then work my way onto base. Yeah, the Conforto effect. He's not the worst. Derek Dietrich was the worst at dropping the elbow in when I looked at it. LaCastro basically just stands too close to the plate and you throw anything inside and he's just like, I won't move out of the way. And even though the rules state that you have to make an attempt to move out of the way, he would literally just stand there, get hit, and then go to first base. So, but he's picked up his bat looks good, and I like stolen bases. And maybe somebody who's like, oh no, the saving appreciation person likes stolen bases. That we're supposed to hate them? No, like it's entertaining towards the game. It's just you have to be very good at it for it to be worthwhile in the current environment. And seemingly he is. I don't know. Could he have stolen more bases but been caught stealing? So he's actually not going at every opportunity because he's worrying about losing that record. I doubt it, but it's still just a awesome stat to have accomplished, especially in the modern game.
Yep, I'm all in on stolen bases and Tim LaCastro. Ben, you've got another rando, I think, for us who most people might not have heard of.
Yeah, well, I'm actually going to pivot from that. So I was also going to talk about Yummy Mercedes, who perfectly encapsulates everything amazing about small sample size baseball at the start of the season. I think he went 7 for 7 to start the year. His numbers are still absolutely ludicrous. He's a really cool story as a guy who was kind of a nobody coming into this year, who his whole career has hit and hasn't had a fielding position. And that's still kind of the case now. I don't think it's the start of a long and fruitful career, but really cool story for a guy who wasn't supposed to do much. But I'm going to pivot to Shohei Ohtani for my second good, because I'm a bit worried we're going to go the whole podcast without talking about him. And even in a week when he doesn't pitch, he still does ridiculous things. I think he hit a double 119 miles an hour the other day, which is the hardest hit ball all season by a person not named Giancarlo Stanton. Last night's game, I think he beat out an infield single at 29.5 kilometers an hour, which ranks as elite sprint speed wise. If you watch the clip, it's just absurd. Just a routine ground ball to short, and he just beats it out because he's that fast. I just think the guy is box office, and we might be watching him at his peak right now. And I'm just going to sit and enjoy it because I don't think I'm ever going to see an athlete quite like him on the baseball field again.
Agreed.
I think I saw that 119 mile an hour hit was tied for the fastest since Statcast has been recording them. For a person who wasn't on the Yankees, I think it's tied with Nelson Cruz. I think it was.
Yeah, so there are five people who hit over 119 miles an hour. Giancarlo Stanton's done it 19 times. Judge has done it 5 times. Cruz has done it once. Ohtani's now done it once, and Gary Sanchez has done it once. So, yeah, it is ludicrous. I think Stanton has the highest, I think.
121.4, I think it was.
122.2, I think, is the biggest. That was 2017. So, yeah, it is quite ridiculous. Show, eh? Yeah, well, and also it went for a double. Like, you just imagine someone like smoking something that hard and then still having to run around the bases. I'd be annoyed.
The Yankees are ridiculous. Rob, take us out with the greatest man in baseball.
Oh, Mr. Votto. And I mean, this isn't even necessarily a great thing about Mr. Votto, as it is the piece that was written in The Athletic. It was a C. Trent Rosenkrantz, Rustin Dodden, Jason Jenks piece. If you haven't read it already, it's fantastic. It's a whole bunch of players talking about the crazy and entertaining and wonderful things that pod favorite Mr. Joseph Votto does on a regular basis. He's moving into that sort of Chuck Norris realm, whereby, you know, there is a Chuck Norris style story about Joey Votto now, and that piece is just brilliant. It is literally just quotes from beginning to end, just quotes from players, and it is absolutely beautiful. If you have 10 minutes to spare, you will do a lot worse than spending it reading that piece in The Athletic about the wonderful things that Mr. Votto says and does before games.
In fact, I think we should end it there. I'm going to tell everybody, go away and read that piece now. The Athletic literally do like free trials every week. So
it's worth
you've
it.
Got no excuse. It's worth it. Even if you just cancel immediately, go and read the Joey Votto piece first. That's my advice to you. That's going to do it for this week, I think. Thank you to everybody for listening. We will obviously be back next week to recap the week's events. Hopefully not give you any more terrifying images. And we'll catch you next time.
I think I need to be bleeped.